Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Michael Quinn, and we're going to talk about the translation process used by Joseph Smith as well as James Strang. Both prophets claim to have translated some plates. So we'll talk about the Vorey plates that James Strang translated, and we'll also talk about the golden plates that Joseph Smith translated. Dr. Quinn has some really interesting things to say about both men and what he thinks about how the Book of Mormon translation process went about. Check out our conversation. So
let's see, I think we've come across five. The other two, I think one was James Strang.
James Strang, and it wasn't specifically James Strang. It was ordination as a specific successor. And originally, the precedent for that was David Whitmer. Joseph Smith had designated him in 1834 to be his successor. And so that was an option as well. And then the Council of 50 was the seventh.
Oh, okay, the Council of 50. Okay, so what do you think about Strang's claim?
Absolute fraud.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. Why do you say that?
The document itself was hand-printed.
Okay.
The signature was hand-printed.
Oh, really?
Joseph never did that.
Okay.
No, it's an absolute fraud.
Absolute fraud.
Yeah.
I know that.
But he was a charismatic fraud, which is why people followed him, because Brigham Young did not come across as charismatic, even though he spoke in tongues and sung in tongues, and he announced revelations, and he had dreams that he thought were very significant. But he was not perceived as a charismatic person. He came across in a different way. And none of the other potential ones came across as charismatic. Rigdon was a great speaker. He had a silver throat and silver tongue. But he was a loose cannon and mentally unstable, and many of the Nauvoo residents knew that. But Strang came along with claims of being the charismatic associate and successor, not associate, but successor. He never knew Joseph Smith, never had any personal contact with him, despite the claim that he did. And he proclaimed himself as a new prophet. And people were hungry for that, because Joseph Smith had not published Revelation since 1841, and that was published in the church periodical, but none since then. And so even in Nauvoo, there were people saying, you know, what have you done for me lately? Where are these revelations? And so there were people who were impatient for the word of God to be delivered, thus saith the Lord, even while Joseph Smith was alive, those last two or three years of his life. And the rank and file knew nothing of what he was teaching privately about God's revelations concerning the theocracy and the Council of 50, plural marriage and the endowment, and all those were very heavily guarded secrets. And so the rank and file were the ones most influenced by this claim of Sidney Rigdon to be a new prophet. And he began dictating revelations, and he began translating ancient records. And then he began mimicking Joseph Smith in other ways. I went through his papers that are primarily, not exclusively, at Yale. And he had even a private group of initiated people into a secret fellowship, men and women. He had ordinances connected with that. So, and eventually he secretly reinstituted polygamy. And because he was this charismatic alternative to Brigham Young, those who had already fallen out with Brigham Young for other reasons, like Joseph Smith's brother William, and men like some members of the Council of 50, and others who saw Brigham Young as not the kind of leader that they wanted to follow, gravitated to Strang. And Strang left open, kind of tantalizingly, the possibility for a living son to descend. and to have prominence, if not the successorship.
One of Strang's sons?
Yeah. Well, no. No, one of Joseph's
sons. Oh, one of Joseph's sons.
And
okay.
So for this reason, members of Joseph Smith's family, his mother, his sister, and William Smith signed a document endorsing John Strang. Emma didn't sign the document, but nearly everyone else in the Strang family still living did. So Strang had a lot of pull as a member, and for a period of time, Strang's followers rivaled those who were following Brigham Young on the trail to Utah, and Brigham Young saw him as a real threat, because Brigham wasn't, you know, he had dictated this one revelation that became eventually part of the Doctrine and Covenants published in Utah, but most people knew of it only through excerpts published here and there. And Strang was just dictating one revelation after another and translating ancient scriptures that he had dug up.
Yeah. John Hamer actually gave a presentation at Sunstone just a couple of months ago and said that he looked at I'm pretty sure it was the Vori plates, very short thing, but he said you could actually translate it. It's very interesting. I'll be publishing that soon. But John actually viewed it, and I'd be curious your opinion. He said that he felt like it was a more legitimate translation of these plates, which John's not claiming they're legitimate, but the translation of them makes more sense than, say, the Anthon transcript. John doesn't really believe in a historical Book of Mormon.
Right.
So, and I don't know how you feel about that. Do you have an opinion on the Book of Mormon?
Yeah, I believe it's written based on an Ur text. I believe it's tribal history, the way the Old Testament was tribal history, originally told around campfires, and that the Book of Mormon is based on an actual Ur text, written Ur text, gold plates. I believe in those.
Okay.
But I don't think that everything in the published 1830 Book of Mormon derives from that Ur text, derives from, and that's a German phrase, Ur text, mean the original text. I don't believe that, I mean, there are things in there you can see as Joseph's misunderstanding of the Bible. You can see things in there that reflect attitudes of the people at the time. You can see things where he's reacting to attitudes of the people of the time. You can find that evidence there, and I can't deny it. And so I don't deny that there are 19th century evidences in the Book of Mormon. But there are other things that, as a faith claim, as well as other evidences in there that I find persuasive as relating to an Ur text, relating to what had been written on gold plates. But Joseph Smith had no ability to translate any language in 1830. He later became acquainted with German. He later became acquainted with Hebrew. He never had any real acquaintance with any academic understanding of Egyptian. Even though Champollion's things have been published, he did not demonstrate any curiosity about that language along the lines that Champollion was promoting. But I believe that he was a translator in the way that he defined translation, which he also applied to his revelatory revision of the Bible. He never went back to the Latin texts, the Greek texts, the Hebrew texts that existed that he could have gone back to. He translated instead the Bible, as he called it, as a revelatory act. And that's, you know, that's how he translated the Book of Mormon. He looked in the hat, he had the seer stone, and he dictated the translation. And it was an act of revelation. It wasn't translation in the way that we define it.
It sounds like you think it's kind of a combination of maybe a legitimate translation with some 19th century
right. And
theology.
And that was how people define translation. I quoted in my analysis of the Book of Mormon what the American Encyclopedia at the time published in 1898, which was really based on the Encyclopedia Britannica, defined translation not as word for word, but as keeping the spirit of the original, keeping the general meaning of the original. That was the meaning of translation when Joseph Smith was a young man. And Brigham Young said that if the Book of Mormon were translated again, he said this publicly in the 1860s, it would be substantially different from what we have as the 1830 Book of Mormon. Well, how could that be if it was word for word? How could it be substantially different? And Brigham Young said that God expects man and translators to act according to their knowledge. And Joseph Smith translated according to his cultural knowledge at the time.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's very interesting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Michael Quinn. In our next conversation, we'll talk about women and priesthood. So this is going to be a very fun back and forth.
So what do you think about Kate Kelly's movement with ordained women?
I understand it. I don't support it.
You don't support it?
No. I understand it, and I don't think it's necessary for women to be ordained to an appendage.
Why not?
Women don't need an appendage to have the priesthood.
They've already got
got the priesthood.
But what about the idea that why couldn't a woman become a bishop?
I hope you enjoyed that short clip from our next interview. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please go to our patreon.com/gospeltangents and subscribe for just $5 a month. If you'd like a transcript of this, please click the yellow subscribe button at gospeltangents.com, and I'll send you this and all future transcripts. Also, if you'd like a paperback like we've got here, those are available at our website at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Please get all updates at our Facebook page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. You can also get transcripts individually at our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. Finally, make sure that you subscribe on our Apple Podcast page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents there and give us a 5-star review while you're at it. Thanks again for listening. Your support helps create more Mormon history classes and podcasts such as this, and so I really appreciate you listening. Please share with your friends.
Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some more of our great videos. Thanks again.